Subaru at WardenMartin.com. Support for today's broadcast comes from the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine, Urbana. The Corkscrew carries a full line of wines, beers, and spirits for everyone from the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held every Friday from 6 to 8 p.m. and Saturday from 2 to 6. Information available at 337-7704 or on the web at thecorkscrew.com.
Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. This is our morning talk program. My name is David Inge. Glad to have you with us. In this part of Focus 580, we will be talking about water. It's something that we have tried to do at least one show on here and for the past couple of years about this time. Our guest, Dr. Derek Winstanley, chief of the Illinois State Water Survey, has stopped by to talk a little bit about water. Now, as I've said, probably when he's been here before and in introducing the topic before the news, here in the state of Illinois, we are more fortunate than other places in the country. We have not experienced the kind of water shortages and water problems that they have in the West, for example. However, one of the things that's also true is that here in the state of Illinois, and specifically in the part of the state where we live, there is growing demand for water. And I know that a lot of people are concerned that if this resource is not managed appropriately, we might indeed get to the point where at some places we would be talking about water shortages. So in this part of Focus, we'll try and cover the basics once again, talk a little bit about where our water comes from, how the demand has increased, and about how local officials are starting to talk about how that resource should be managed. And as I said, our guest is Dr. Derek Winstanley. He's chief of the Illinois State Water Survey, has been since January 1997. Before that, he served as deputy chief scientist in the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration and also as director of the National Acid Precipitation Assessment Program in Washington, D.C. He grew up in England, got his Ph.D. in climatology at Oxford. He also worked in the U.K., in the Middle East, in Africa, and Canada before coming to the United States to the National Center for Atmospheric Research in Boulder, Colorado. And we're pleased that he could be here. And questions, of course, welcome. 333-9455, that's for Champaign Urbana listeners, and toll-free 800-222-9455. Well, thank you very much once again for being here.
Thank you. I'm very pleased to be here again.
And I'm really glad that you could do this, and now you've been good enough to come over. I think this is now the third summer that you've been here to sort of to do this same show. And again, I think our idea was that it's a good thing for people here to be thinking about water. Perhaps some people in East Central Illinois do, but for an awful lot of people, we turn on the tap and we use as much as we want, and we don't really think very much about where that water comes from or the fact that at some point that the supply might be put under greater pressure than it is now. Maybe what we should do here at the beginning, and we have a caller, and I promise this person we'll get to them, is to talk a little bit about drought. Mm-hmm. Since we know here that the month of May was one of the driest on records so far here, it's also been quite dry in June, and that I think, are we now officially talking about being in a drought?
Yes, we are. For the state as a whole, we're categorized in what we call a moderate drought situation, which means that the rainfall over the past 3 months has been about 40 to 55% below normal. Normally at this time of year, from March through June, we receive about 15.5 inches of rainfall. This year, we're about 6, 7, 8 inches below normal throughout most of the state. And the worst impacted area is the north central area. That's between about Bloomington Normal across to Peoria and up to the Chicago area. And that area is on the verge of being categorized as a severe drought situation.
Hmm. Obviously, this has impact on agriculture and on the home landscape. Does it, in any kind of a short-term focus, have some impact on groundwater supplies?
It does a little bit at this point. I need to step back and talk about the whole hydrologic cycle, the way we look at water as a whole. Mm-hmm. And drought is typically initiated when precipitation is below normal, and in many cases when temperature is above normal, which causes excess evapotranspiration. So first of all, the first evidence of a drought is a climatological drought when we look at the rainfall records. From there, we look at the impact of those reduced rainfall levels on stream flow, reservoirs, lakes, for example, surface water supplies. One of the first components of the hydrologic cycle that is impacted by below normal rainfall is soil moisture. And what we're seeing in the state is soil moisture much below normal. I believe the agricultural statistics that came out yesterday showed that 93% of the state of Illinois had moisture shortages in the top layer. So from there, you go down deeper into the aquifers, and it takes a longer time to see the evidence of a decreased precipitation. But for the past 4 months, we have seen an ever-decreasing level of water in the shallow aquifers. Mm-hmm. In the deeper aquifers down several hundred feet, you wouldn't expect to see such a rapid response at all. Mm-hmm. So there are different timescales of response in different parts of the hydrologic cycle.
So for people who are drawing their water from a deep aquifer, you would expect if this went on for years, you might start to see an impact. But over a period of months, it's probably not something that you're going to notice.
If you look at the real deep aquifers up in northeast Illinois, for example, which are 1,000, 1,500 feet below the surface, these droughts have no impact mm-hmm. on those water supplies. So they are the most safe and drought-resilient, but also some of the most overstressed aquifers in the state.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And for those people who depend on surface water, is this likely to become a problem?
We don't see any acute surface water problems at the moment, although what we have seen is that the stream flows in most of the rivers and streams throughout the state is very low, which means there's less water flowing into the reservoirs. Lake Michigan, which normally continues to rise from spring through August, has also stopped rising at this point. So we're generally seeing the first signs of concern for surface waters, but we don't actually see any acute problems at the moment. So we will continue to monitor those surface waters and the other groundwater resources very carefully.
Hmm. Now, the governor has officially declared this to be a drought. What does exactly that mean, and what sort of response then is there?
Well, the water survey tracks the climate conditions and the soil moisture conditions and the surface water and groundwater conditions throughout the state on a regular basis. We produce monthly reports on all those conditions. And over the past few months, we became increasingly concerned about the situation. And last week, at a meeting of the State Water Plan Task Force that occurred in Springfield, the Water Survey recommended and the State Water Plan Task Force accepted the recommendation that we should convene the State Drought Response Task Force. That recommendation went to the governor, and he accepted our recommendation and initiated the meeting of the Drought Response Task Force. The first meeting will be next week.
Hmm. So who is on this task force?
The task force is chaired by Gary Clark, who's with the Illinois Department of Natural Resources Office of Water Resources in Springfield, and it's co-chaired by Roger Selberg, who's with the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency, Division of Public Water Supplies. And then there are other members from Department of Public Health, Department of Agriculture, Emergency Management Agency, the Governor's Office, and I also serve on that task force.
So what do you expect then the task force will be issuing some kind of recommendations having to do with conservation, for example, use of water? What sort of things are appropriate when we get into a situation like this?
I think all the state agencies are currently recommending that people conserve as much water as possible. We are seeing a lot of communities where pumpage withdrawals are at a pretty high level. Mm-hmm. So we're encouraging conservation as much as possible. The real crunch situation is if the situation worsens and we ever got to the point where the task force might recommend to the governor that we have an emergency situation, at least in some parts of the state. And the governor does have emergency powers for dealing with the drought situation. Perhaps I could just read the governor's mandate.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. I'm reading from a November 1988 document from the Drought Task Force policy on mandating water conservation and emergency declarations. And that says that under the Illinois Emergency Services and Disaster Agency Act of 1988, the governor is given broad powers to respond as necessary to an emergency. These powers include the suspension of any statutes, rules, or regulations, and the taking of real estate following certain provisions. These powers last for 30 days and follow an emergency declaration by the governor, which may be renewed. So emergency, as declared by the governor, is usually dependent upon local authorities realizing that they no longer have sufficient resources and authority to deal with the situation locally, and it requires some higher-level, state-level emergency response.
Mm. The thing about droughts is that they can become self-perpetuating, so, and the longer it goes on, then the greater chance that it will continue to go on. At the same time, we know that weather patterns can change and can turn around, and it could turn out that the month of August, for example, could be cooler and wetter than average. It could go either way. Having said that, and reminding people that long range forecasting is difficult, is what's the general thinking of guys there over of the scientists over there in your shop about the long range pattern and what's likely. What do we think maybe would be likely to happen during the month of July? And then if you'd even hazard a kind of a guess about August?
Well, since I've been at the Water Survey since 1997, we found that the best way of terminating a drought is actually to call the meeting of the State Drought Task Force. We've done this twice before since I've been there, and very shortly afterwards, both times, nature has responded and given us copious rains. So
it's like when you wash your car and
right.
It rains.
Yeah. So we're actually keeping our fingers crossed by convening the Drought Task Force again that Mother Nature may be listening and hopefully will respond. But that's wishful thinking. The long-range seasonal forecast from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration shows no predictive skill either above or below normal precipitation. There's about an equal chance, so normal situation. But even a normal summer would not be sufficient to terminate a drought because we're already 6, 7, 8 inches below normal rainfall. So I would say that the situation at this point does not look good. We have, as we see in the forecast again today, chances of scattered, isolated thunderstorms, which are producing some heavy rain locally, as we got in Urbana yesterday. But we don't see much in the forecast that might give us the widespread soaking rains that we would really need to terminate the drought in the near future.
So even if in the months of, say, July and August, we got average rainfall, we would still be looking at a significant deficit?
Yes.
Yeah. Our guest here this morning in this part of Focus 580 is Derek Winstanley. He is chief of the Illinois State Water Survey, which is based here on the campus of the University of Illinois. He's also adjunct professor of geography at the U of I. And we're talking about water resources in Illinois. We do have a caller who's been very patient here. We want to get them in. And other people who are listening, of course, you're welcome to call with your questions. 333-9455. We do also have a toll-free line that's good anywhere that you can hear us. And that is 800-222-9455. Here is our Urbana caller, line number one. Hello.
Hello. Yes. Good morning.
Good morning.
I have gathered some information from news accounts, and one of them was the statement that the next big fight over resources will be water. And then I've heard about the multinational companies that are buying up water corporations. Well, they're not corporations. Water works in South America and Central America. And then I heard about there was a man in Canada who wanted to bottle Canadian water and ship it overseas, and that was stopped. And then I heard that what used to be the Northern Illinois Water Corporation, which handled our water here locally, was purchased by a German company. And so I'm thinking, why in the world would a German company want to buy our waterworks? And then it made me question, goodness, you know, could they simply bottle our water and sell it overseas? Is there anything in the statutes in Illinois that makes it impossible for water to be bottled locally and shipped elsewhere?
You raise some wide-ranging, interesting questions there. Your first point about the possibility of a fight over water, that is often reported from many different countries in the world, particularly the developing countries that are on the arid and semi-arid margins of the world, including the Middle East. And I would say that the fight over water in some of those countries is already underway. It's a scarce resource and is being treated as such. Even in this country, there's water wars, for example, between Georgia and its neighbors. And in the West, between California and its neighbors in Colorado, how much water each state can take out of the Colorado River. So I would say that in various levels, water wars are already underway. As far as multinational companies are concerned and the takeover of Champaign-Urbana by a German company, we have close connections with the company here in Champaign-Urbana, and we have no reason to believe that they're anything but a very good steward of the resources, and see it as a good investment to invest in water supplies in this part of the world. As far as can they bottle water and export it, I have never heard them talking about that, and I can't imagine that they would. The cost of shipping bottled water is high. But ultimately, if anyone tried to do that, I think everyone would have to go back to the basic law that undermines the withdrawal and use of water in Illinois, and that is what we call the riparian doctrine, which means that it's groundwater is a common good, and anyone can take water from the aquifer in reasonable quantities for reasonable use. So if anyone, reasonable is not defined. The only way that reasonable use is defined is when someone objects to what's being done and then takes it to the courts, and the lawyers typically determine what's reasonable. So if residents around here ever got to the point where they feel uncomfortable about the use of local water, they have the right to take it to the courts for resolution.
Are you familiar with that news report about bottling water in Canada and shipping it overseas?
No, I'm not specifically.
Okay. Well, so we don't have to worry immediately about having our water shipped out of the area.
I certainly don't. There's been a lot of discussion up all around the Great Lakes. As you know, the Great Lakes is one of the greatest freshwater sources of water in the world. And the American states surrounding the Great Lakes and the Canadian provinces surrounding the Great Lakes have recently been in the process of negotiating a new annex to their agreement. And there's very strong agreement that we should not ship water out of the Great Lakes, either in bottle form or by pipeline. So I think everyone is very conscious and, of the value of our water and reluctant to export it.
Okay. Well, thank you for that reassurance.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let's continue. Here we have someone next to talk with in Champaign, line two. Hello.
Hello. Good morning.
Yes. Good morning.
I just wanted to say that it might sound a little crazy, but yesterday, we have a small garden here. So last night around 7, I went out and watered the garden. And we also have some young trees, three of them, that I water. And it was the minute I started watering the trees, and this happens every single time, the wind will start blowing, you know, and it's just everything gets really fresh and cool.
Mm-hmm.
It's just amazing to me. And another thing that I've observed when I go out and water the garden in the summertime is that then usually it's followed by a rain. And I don't know what I know. There's no scientific answer to this phenomena, but I do believe in the Gaia philosophy, mm-hmm. you know. I don't know if you're familiar with that.
Yes, I am.
Yeah. And so I am just wondering what you think about that. And then I'd also, you know, get off the line, was wondering if you could explain a little bit more about where our water comes from. You mentioned a term that I'm not really familiar with. I don't know where our water comes from.
Okay. First of all, I would suggest you go into your garden and try and water the trees regularly every day in the hope that you'll stimulate nature to provide some rainfall every day. I think it's totally fortuitous that nature seems to bring on precipitation when you've been out watering your trees. On a local scale like that, I don't think there's any scientific rationale for being able to account for that. Certainly on a larger regional scale, once the ground is wet, then there are what we call positive feedbacks between the soil moisture and the moisture in the atmosphere, so that more water gets evaporated back into the atmosphere when it's wet in the soil, and that tends to stimulate more rainfall. And vice versa, during the drought situation that we're in, because the ground is so dry, it's not evaporating as much moisture into the atmosphere, and that's tending to dampen the rainfall effects. On the question of where water comes from, here in Champaign-Urbana, the water comes from an aquifer that extends under the land surface here about a couple of hundred feet down. And that's a very important and quite large aquifer that extends across from Indiana through Champaign across to the Illinois River. And it's quite interesting because that used to be the course of the old Ohio River millions of years ago. And then during the last and previous glacial periods, all the glacial material, the debris and the sand and gravel pushed down by the glaciers filled in the old Ohio River Valley and pushed the Ohio River to its present course further south. And those sand and gravels laid down by the glaciers are now the source of our groundwater. They contain a lot of water several hundred feet below the surface. So all the water here in Champaign-Urbana is from the groundwater. Some of the smaller communities, and Bloomington Normal, for example, have their own reservoirs. Those are much more susceptible to drought.
So as a way of understanding this, or I guess as a way I think about it, there is, if you could look underground, you could see the various layers of different kinds of rock and so forth, that there would be this area that was not quite spongy, but in a sense it will absorb the water and will hold the water. The water ends up percolating down through the soil, gets to a certain point where it won't go any deeper,
right.
And it gets held there. So then if you drill down and you get into that area, then you can draw water from
yes.
it.
Yes. I suppose a simple analogy might be a laid sponge cake with the different layers. And there are some other shallow aquifers that are not as extensive, much nearer the surface, and some communities do draw from those. But from the larger suppliers, like here in Champaign-Urbana, we draw from what we call the Mahomet Aquifer, which is several hundred feet down. And immediately below that is solid bedrock. So you're right, the water doesn't percolate any further down. Mm. So it's an underground reservoir is another way of looking at it.
And ultimately then is the source of that water rainfall?
The source of all water in lakes, streams, in the soil and all aquifers is rainfall. It just takes a different amount of time. The soil near the surface is obviously impacted very quickly by changes in precipitation and temperature. And as you go deeper, it takes longer and longer to get down there. So a lot of the water that exists down there is, in fact, many thousands of years old.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Derek Winstanley. He's chief of the Illinois State Water Survey, has been since 1997. It's based here on the campus of the University of Illinois. We're talking about water resources in Illinois, and if you have questions, you're certainly welcome to call 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. I think when the very first time that we talked would now be 3 years ago, I think, one of the things we talked about was the fact that, say, just look at here this part of the state, those of us who do draw our water from the Mahomet Aquifer, about how much the demand for water has grown over time as the population in this part of the state has grown. How, I wonder, do you have some numbers that you can put on that about how much demand and how much water use has gone up just in the last few years?
Water demand and water use throughout the state, including central Illinois, has increased fairly steadily each year. Demand is driven primarily by growth in population and growth in the economy. So as those grow, so also does the demand for water. In looking to the future, which is very important to do, we recently commissioned a report that was prepared by Professor Ben Jugaleski at Southern Illinois University at Carbondale, because he is an expert in projecting water use and water demand. But we asked Ben to produce projections county by county throughout the whole state of water demand for the next 20 years to 2025. And recently, Ben produced that report, which I have in front of me here. And it's very interesting because it shows continued increases in water use throughout the state. All these projections are based upon the quality of data that we have for baselines and the assumptions that you use in looking to the future. It's really similar to looking at climate change in the future. The way you look at climate change is to quantify the population increases, the energy increases in energy use and so on, and then translate those into greenhouse gases and then into climate change. In the case of water, we look at the population projections and the economic projections, the energy projections, and translate those into water demand. So if we look ahead to 2025, which is not really a long time period, we really need to look beyond that. But for the next 20 years, the study projected that Illinois water use without significant conservation would increase by about 28%, which is an additional 4.4 billion. That's 10 to the ninth or 4.4 thousand million gallons of water per day. The study also showed that with conservation, that amount could be reduced quite dramatically. But quite interestingly, the biggest user of water in the state of Illinois at the moment and in the future is the energy sector. Almost 90% of all the water used every day in the state of Illinois goes to generating thermoelectric energy, that is, energy produced by coal and natural gas and nuclear power plants. And that growth is expected to continue. I do need to add that about 97 or 98% of that water is reused. It's cycled through the power plants and then put back into, for example, Clinton Lake. But that small percentage that is actually used or consumed that we talk about still is a large number. It's hundreds of million gallons a day that are consumed by the energy sector, and that is projected to increase in the future.
Hmm. How much of a problem for the existing water supply would be this increase in demand? Would that put significant pressure on the available supply?
Well, the whole purpose of producing these forecasts of water demand for the next 20 years is trying to instill in everyone improved water supply planning and management throughout the state. And there are several key steps in that, of which producing forecasts of water demand is one. But overall, we have a goal of ensuring adequate and reliable supplies of clean water at reasonable cost for everyone in the state. And you need water supply managers need to do a number of things in order to ensure that goal is achieved. First of all, you need to know the capacity of existing systems, exactly the question that you're raising. How capable are existing water withdrawal and distribution systems capable of meeting future demands? Then you need to know what's the potential yield of water from the groundwater aquifers and from lakes and streams and reservoirs. Can those meet existing future demand under existing systems? Mm-hmm. And then you need to draw together the supply and demand parts of the equation and ask whether we can meet future demand with existing systems. And if not, we need to identify options that would either increase the demand through new pumpage systems from the groundwater or new reservoirs or new pumps from the rivers and streams, or by decreasing demand through energy conservation and increased efficiency of use.
Hmm. And at this point, those two basic questions, how much water can we supply, what is their demand, we're still working on the answers to them?
We're trying to get that process that I've just outlined implemented throughout the state, so everyone has a long-term perspective on these water demands, and that each system addresses them according to the local needs. But in addition to local suppliers looking at the long term, we're also trying to encourage people in watersheds and people who draw from aquifers to do a watershed analysis and an aquifer analysis, because those geographical entities cut across political boundaries. At the moment, most water planning is done within individual communities and individual counties. What we need is to stimulate water supply planning and management beyond those political boundaries to look at whole aquifers, such as here in central Illinois, and entire watersheds.
We have some other callers here. Let's get them into the conversation. Next to someone listening in Marshall, that's on our toll-free line. Hello.
Yeah, I had a couple questions that were related. This report that you spoke of on the water supply, future water supply and so forth, is that available for the public? And then also, do you have communication with the municipalities and the counties? Is this report filtered down to them? And we draw from a large underground aquifer in Clark County, and it just seems like everyone thinks it's never-ending and selling to everybody all over the place, and I just wonder how people know how long it's going to last.
The answer to your first question, yes, that report is available. It's available on our website. And if you have a pen handy, I can give you our address. That's www.sws.uiuc.edu. And if you look under highlights, you'll find that report.
Okay.
And your second question was whether we talk to municipalities and counties, and the answer is definitely yes, we do.
Mm-hmm.
We keep them informed through one-on-one meetings and through meetings of their professional organizations where we give them updates. In fact, 2 weeks ago, we had a meeting here in Champaign to specifically present the findings from this water forecast report to those people here in Champaign. And we got a very good response. Also, here in central Illinois, we're talking with groups like the Mahomet Aquifer Consortium, whose goal is to manage the waters of the Mahomet Aquifer in a wise manner. So we're trying to instill them this long-term perspective for looking at water resources.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
All right, thank you for the call. Let's go next to line number one, and I believe that would be someone listening in Champaign. Hello?
Yes, I want to move somewhat from water quantity issues to water quality issues, both surface and, of course, the Mahomet Aquifer. What is the status in terms of water quality, Mahomet Aquifer and surface waters in this area as a result of municipal, industrial, and agricultural uses?
If I could start with the Mahomet Aquifer, the quality of the water is very high here. In fact, I heard on the radio over the weekend that the water from the Mahomet Aquifer was entered into a national competition and it came out one of the winners as the best quality of water in the country. So I think we need to make sure we preserve that. In other parts of the aquifer further west, for example, in McLean and Tazewell counties, there are significant concentrations of natural pollutants such as arsenic, which exceed public standards. So that's a concern. In the shallow aquifers, we do often report higher concentrations of some products such as atrazine that's associated with agricultural use and nitrogen. But in general, nitrogen is quickly denitrified or taken out of the system in a chemical format. So it's not generally a problem in the aquifers. Those pollutants are more of a problem in surface waters that receive runoff both from the agricultural areas and from the towns and wastewater treatment and so on. We sometimes see exceedances of those water quality standards, but I think in general the water quality in this area is good, which doesn't mean that we can't take steps to ensure that it remains good and to improve it in those conditions and those areas where we do see problems.
If I could, just a follow-up, 20% of our fresh water comes from the Great Lakes, and of course we sit on the Lake Michigan. How is water quality in the Great Lakes, Lake Michigan, especially with respect to the toxic hot spots that exist in some of the Great Lakes?
In fact, in Illinois, we withdraw about 2.1 billion gallons of water per day from Lake Michigan, which is the most that any state withdraws. That supplies most of the need up in the Chicago area. The quality of water in Lake Michigan is generally high. We do have higher concentrations of some chemicals, including those deposited from the atmosphere. But we don't seem to get the same magnitude of problems that you get in some of the other Great Lakes, Lake Erie and Ontario, for example, where I know they've had fairly severe cases of hypoxia or oxygen deficiency. So I think the water quality problems in Lake Michigan are not as great, but they are being studied and they certainly can be improved.
Okay, well, thank you, sir.
Thank you. Thank you. Let's go to Belgium. We're by Danville, line number two. Hello.
Hello. Bring up a problem that I see. I happen to own property that has a stream that goes through it, and the stream, its flow comes off of a lot of areas where there are trucks and cars and things like that, parking lots, a lot of them, areas where there's higher concentration of automobiles. And it seems as though we see a degrading quality in that water from all the stuff that's flowing out of these automobiles into onto the parking lot immediately into the streams and on. Even though they have retention ponds to slow down the flow sometimes, that really doesn't answer the problem of all the compounds that are flowing into the stream, which I find, you know, there ought to be some way to solve this problem, because as you mentioned, these things will flow into the aquifer in time.
Mm-hmm. Could I ask you if, in fact, you have monitored any of the pollutants, or is it you suspect this is happening?
Well, knowing exactly where the streams flow from, which is right beside the parking lot, I'm pretty sure it's happening. and it's happening all over the United States. I mean, it's not just to my particular situation, but any place there's a parking lot, it flows into stuff, and cars leak an enormous amount of pollutants. I mean, maybe they're not thoroughly deadly at the very instant you take them, but they're not helping our environment.
Yes, I agree with you. And for your local condition, I would suggest that you contact the Illinois Environmental Protection Agency to see what specific analysis and advice they can give you. But I would like to mention one study that we've just initiated at the Water Survey, and that is to do an experimental pilot-level project to measure some of these pollutants that we typically don't measure on a routine basis related to medicines and caffeine and those organic products. We're doing this in three streams in the state over the summer, So by the fall, we should have some indication on the extent to which these undesirable products are entering the system. And from there, we'll decide whether to do more intensive studies or where to go from there. But we're definitely concerned about all these water quality problems.
To take to another direction, in well situation, because I do live on a well, mm-hmm. My well goes down into the kind of like the fingers of what would be called the Muhammad Aquifer.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're at the very edge of it, and I'm fairly deep well. And I'm sure that as other people draw out this high-quality water, I'm at the edge of the cup. And is there any... there's no salvation for me in that situation, is there?
In terms of...
Once my water's gone, right?
That's correct. The only recourse you would have, as I mentioned earlier, would to make a legal appeal to the courts that some of your neighbors are drawing water that's not reasonable.
Well, my neighbors are Champagne, mm-hmm. In all honesty, it's all of us, wherever we may be, and I'm mm-hmm. a long ways from Champagne. I'm mm-hmm. 30, 40 miles away from Champagne, but you are using the water, and it does drain the cup, so to speak.
That's true, and as long as everyone's using it in a reasonable manner, there's no recourse. As I say, the only way to find recourse to that will be to take it through the legal system to get it determined whether or not what is happening is reasonable or not. There is a legal way to proceed that.
I see. Thank you very much, sir.
All right, thank you. We have about 6-7 minutes left in this part of Focus 580. Our guest is Derek Winstanley. He is chief of the Illinois State Water Survey. He's also adjunct professor of geography at the U of I. We're talking about water resources in the state of Illinois. Questions are welcome. 333-9455. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Something we've touched on, and I know that we've talked about this every time that we have talked, is the need for all of the people that represent the interests that draw on the water resource to get together and in some fair and common way make some decisions about how that resource is going to be managed. Something that no doubt is only going to get more difficult no matter where it is you're talking about. If you're talking about East Central Illinois, it's going to get more difficult as the demand grows, as population grows, as there are going to be more and more people saying, we want water and we want water. That the only way that it's really going to be managed is for people to get together, local governmental officials first, and probably most important, to decide how it is we're going to share and we're going to manage this resource. Is that indeed happening?
Yes, it is beginning to happen. First of all, I think the need to do that has been increasingly recognized. I'm first of all going to give reference to the situation in other states, particularly states in the Southwest and West that have experienced worst-case droughts in recent years, where they've realized they have really major problems in continuing to provide water. And that has initiated processes within each of those states to stimulate regional grassroots level comprehensive water supply planning and management. And it's a very complex, very expensive, very time-consuming process. For example, in Texas, they've had perhaps 1,000 meetings, various constituents and groups throughout the state. But it does bring in all the key stakeholders throughout the state. So rather than having state government impose solutions in every part of the state, it's an opportunity for stakeholders in each region of the state to analyze their own situation and to come up with options that are optimal for their own particular situation. Here in central Illinois, a few years ago, the Muhammad Aquifer Consortium was founded, which is a consortium of stakeholders throughout central Illinois, across from Danville, across to the Illinois River. And the consortium is composed of local community stakeholders, the Farm Bureau, people with water authorities, and so on. So it's a broad representation. And their goal is indeed to produce a plan for the management of the water resources in the Muhammad Aquifer. And increasingly, not only do they want better science on which to build those decisions, but there's an increasing recognition that they need to start thinking about management, asking themselves what are the key management issues that need to be addressed, and to them working through the system, how they're going to manage that. So there is impetus, there is progress, and we need to stimulate and keep that going.
We have several callers here now. We'll see how many we can get in the time that remains, and we'll take them in the order they came in, starting with Urbana, line one.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
My name's Dwayne Bergren. I worked recently with an Champaign County Board's Environmental Advisory Panel. And of the six concerns that we identified as primary and high priority for county government and the public to consider, we listed the Mahomet Aquifers status and the need for more research, citing in particular the Mahomet Aquifer Consortium and the work of the Water Survey and Geological Surveys. That report, incidentally, for whoever's interested, could be accessed by calling the County Board Office, 384-3772, and it's called the Report to the Champaign County Board from the Environmental Advisory Panel, November 2004. But some of us don't view the operations of the corporate world with a lot of equanimity, particularly when we reflect that one of Enron's operations called Azurix, headed by a woman named Rebecca Mark, attempted to, what would be the word, commoditize water globally. Mark's operation, Azurix, was finally cut loose by Enron. But as a side note, the Thames Water Company, which was part of her operation, is a subsidiary that owns the American Water Company that supplies our water. Now, I'm not imputing sinister motives to the company at any level. I'm just saying, in the business world, where the bottom line rules, it's always a possibility that things can go very badly, and that it becomes clear that in a county like Champaign, where we don't have valleys, unoccupied deep valleys deep enough to create surface water supplies. And our panel tried to take the 100-year view, if you will. One concern with MAC, that increased exposure to the organization, the county board has a member participating in that panel. The science is good. The efforts to organize research is great. It should have been, but the concern is that this should have been funded 10 years ago. In the atmosphere of government economics right now and budgeting, it's not going to be funded next year, this year, except in a very limited way. We really need to light some political fires to get the research done that tells us exactly what kind of a resource its capacity that the Mahomet Aquifer represents. And the second thing is that I think there's a notable lack of public interest representation on MAC. All the people who serve on that organization, the Mahomet Aquifer Consortium, are idealistic and good and well-versed in what they do. But I would just point out that the scientists are not, thank God, politicians, and the most of the representatives are water producers. Again, I don't want to cast aspersions on the motives of the people who are drilling the wells, maintaining them, and putting water in the mains. But the interest of a water producer is a market interest, largely, although some of them are municipal public. So I'll leave you with that comment and urge people to call up the county and get a copy of this report. It's also available on the net, but the address is so long that I won't elaborate now in the interest of time.
Well, I appreciate the call. And in fact, we do only have about a minute left, so I don't know how you'd like to wrap up.
Yeah, quickly, I would encourage members of the public to attend some of the Mahomet Aquifer Consortium meetings. They are open to the public, and the consortium does encourage that. So I would just like at the end to repeat our web address where you can get information on these reports. And we also have a new drought page that will give you up-to-date information on the evolving drought situation. Again, that is www.sws.uiuc.edu.
Right. Well, I thank you very much for coming and spending some time with us once again.
Thank you. It's a pleasure. I enjoyed it.
Our guest, Derek Winstanley. He's chief of the Illinois State Water Survey. He's also adjunct professor of geography at the University of Illinois. Programs here on WILL made possible by a grant from Christopher's Fine Jewelry Design, a gallery of imaginative jewelry and gifts in downtown Champaign, offering one-of-a-kind custom design, gemstone round tables, and conflict-free diamonds direct from Canada. The end of our fiscal year is almost here. Operating costs are increasing. We face known cuts in university dollars and some uncertainty in our federal funding. These changes in our funding base could not be foreseen when we set our goal last July. It's clear that this year's listener support goal must be exceeded. What you hear on WILL Radio in the coming year depends on it. You can make a contribution right now online. Just go to our website. It's WILL.UIUC.EDU and help us preserve our core programs. And we thank you very much. Coming up later today, some conversation on the Afternoon Magazine about the issue of assisted living. What are the choices for seniors and their families? Consumer Reports Magazine investigated the current situation for its July issue. One of the editors, Amanda Walker, will be talking with Celeste Quinn today on the Afternoon Magazine. We'll also talk with the founder and chair of the Consumer Consortium on Assisted Living, Karen Love. That's the Afternoon Magazine. The program itself gets underway at noon here on AM 580. Celeste Quinn is the host, and then this conversation about assisted living comes in the 1 o'clock hour. We're going to take a break. We'll have more Focus in a bit. Right now, though, we'll have some news and a market update.
The Carle Center for Rural Health and Farm Safety, a division of Carle Foundation Hospital, is proud to underwrite agricultural programming at WILL. The center helps residents of rural communities with education and training in farm safety. For more information, call 217-383-4606.
We'll forecast in the U.S. Midwest for rain at least some parts of the growing area and a break in the heat, which could ease crop stress. Have prices rather volatile on the Chicago Board of Trade. Soybeans down as much as 32¾ for the November contract. First of all, July wheat down 5 at 326. September 336¼, down 4¼. July corn 218, down 3½. September 227¾, down 3½. December and March down 3, December at 238½, and March at 245½. July soybeans 661, down 33½. August at 663.